Parashas Ve'era. Today we will continue what we began last week in Parsha Shemos. In other words, we will continue trying to understand Moshe, our leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, who he was, what madrega he held, his uniqueness. And we'll begin to understand the Jewish people a little bit and Moshe's challenges in bringing them from the lowest position, the 49th level of Tumah, to a nation that would be ready to be Mekabel Torah, and then taking them beyond that to a nation that would be able to bring the Shechina down here on their own, unlike by Har Sinai, where Hashem said, stand at the bottom of the mountain and be quiet and do not say, do not do anything and do not come up. And it's a one-way street and I will descend, so to speak, on the mountain and reveal myself to you. Unlike that event at Har Sinai, later on in the Midbar, Klal Yisrael built a Mishkan perfectly according to the commandments of Moshe. They built a physical place on this earth which would allow Hashem Shekhinah to be evident there. And on that eighth day, Yom HaShmini, the greatest day in Jewish history, they stood and they waited to see if their efforts had been successful, if they had sanctified the physical to such a degree in the Mishkan that Hashem's fire would descend from heaven and consume the karbanos, and it did. And there was no greater day, because it meant that Klal Yisrael had, on their own, through their madrega, human beings, brought the Shekhinah down to this earth. And Moshe led them through this entire process. When we speak about the Bnei Yisrael as they are now in Mitzrayim, steeped in all of the tumah that Mitzrayim extended and kind of tainted them with, we have to understand, though, what we are speaking about. When we speak about Klal Yisrael on the 49th level of tumah, that is not a vague and general concept that they were just immoral on every level. Because think about it, if there's only 50 levels of tumah and the Jews were on the 49th, so where were the Egyptians? On the 50th, just one level below them? The Egyptians who were shtufei zima, who were steeped in immorality, that on the night of Makos Bechoros, numerous children died, sons died in one house because one was the firstborn of the mother from this man and the firstborn of the mother from that man, etc. When we talk about the 49 levels of Tumah, it's clear that Klal Yisrael are being measured on their own scale. You know, there are many types of thermometers. There's the thermometer for body temperature. It only goes up to 106 degrees. And then there's a thermometer for a pizza oven, and it goes up to 2,000 degrees. And 50 degrees here or there is irrelevant, but not on a body thermometer. The thermometer that the Bnei Yisrael are being judged with is a very sensitive thermometer. And when we say that they're on the 49th level of Tumah, we mean intellectually. We do not mean morally. Morally, they were kadosh. There's only one case, Chazal tell us, of a woman who found herself abused by a mitzri because she conducted herself with too much familiarity, you might say, Shlomis Bas Divri. She used to say, Shalom, Shalom, Shalom. She was the daughter of Divri, which was a hint to Dibor. She spoke too much, and she was eventually taken by a mitzri. This is the mitzri Moshe killed. She's the only case. We're talking about a righteous people. But in terms of their intellectual purity, in other words, their attachment to monotheism, to the concept of a single God, creator of heaven and earth, and controller of all of nature, this they had lost the ability to really, really stick to, and they had fallen into paganistic approaches, concepts of how the world is run. Only in terms of their intellectual mistakes do we say that they were on the 49th level of Tumah. We do not mean that in morality. They were the most upstanding people. They were righteous people. Moshe, in searching for the sin, before Hashem ever spoke to him, remember? When he first killed that mitzri, and then he came out the next day and he saw the two Jews, Dasan and Aviram, fighting. And he says, Russia, you know, why are you lifting up your hand? And then they say to him, are you going to kill us like you killed the Mitzri? And the Moshe became afraid because he realized that it was word got out. And he said, now I know why the Jews, above and beyond all nations, have to suffer so much. Because There's those among them who speak Lashon Hara. This is all he could find. You understand? This is all he could find, was that some among them were loose with the tongue. So we're talking about a morally very great nation, but intellectually they are they're verging on Ovdei being Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They're just at the edge. They have lost their understanding of monotheism. And so knowing that, we begin to understand Moshe's challenge. He must come to them in the name of Hashem, the one God, creator of heaven and earth, controller of all nature, and try to convince them that this one God has the power to do whatever he wants and will overwhelm all the basics, all the givens that they take for granted, all the rules of nature, all those paganistic concepts which they think they are governed by, and they have to abandon all of that without fear that the gods will be angry and pour down their wrath on that, and they have to totally begin to think in a new direction. That's Moshe's challenge. Now, based on what we said last week, we're going to go back into the Pesukim and see, as we said, that every question Moshe has for God is not just about his own insecurity. It's not some emotional, psychological thing. He is questioning as we said last week, his role as Shaliach, what he is meant to convey to them, how Hashem plans to work out this Geula, all issues that are fundamental basics to Judaism. So we spoke about last week how he asked about his role. I am transparent and invisible, because in the end, as we said, Moshe is not even in the Haggadah. He says, Mi Anochi, in other words, you promised Anochi will take you out of Mitzrayim, and am I now meant to be a substitute for Anochi? And the answer is yes. You are the transparent shell that Anochi will work through, and you will not take credit for anything you do, and in the end, you won't even have any mention in the Haggadah. And all your achievements are credited directly back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You are meant to negate yourself totally. Total bitul. That's the first thing that Moshe has to understand. Now, if Moshe can achieve this madrega of total bitul, to the extent that he comes to Klal Yisrael as a messenger, a shaliach of God's, and takes no credit for all the work he has to do, then he can be trusted, we said, with the Torah, and he can be trusted that he is conveying the Torah exactly, precisely, in its pristine form, without introducing anything on his own. There's nothing of Moshe's in the Torah. And he is so trustworthy, because he is so humble, and he has so negated himself, and taken on this mission. This is the proving ground for the Jewish people, that they can trust Moshe with the Torah that they're receiving from him. And Hashem himself trusts Moshe to such a degree that he allows the Torah to be called Toras Moshe. Right? This sounds familiar. And then we spoke about the idea that we think that human achievement is ours, but Torah is really something that belongs to God, that we are blessed, we're given a gift, that we have some access to it. It's exactly the opposite. Human achievement, political, national, etc., is all attributed directly to God, but the Torah that a person integrates, learns and allows to change them is theirs and no longer belongs to Hashem in a sense. Torah lo b'shamayim, Torah is not in heaven. It's here belonging to the person. So Moshe first has to see what position he conveys about himself to the nation. But then comes the next question. We're going to go back to Shemos a little bit, but then we're going to move into Va'era, because we need to understand some of his of what Hashem establishes for him before we can understand his later questions. So the next question that Moshe asks in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Dalid of Shemos, he says, I'm going to come to Bnei Yisrael, and I'm going to say, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they will say to me, Ma Shemo, what's his name? What should I answer them? That's Moshe's next question. In other words, I see my role, and now tell me the essential message that I have to convey to the Jewish people. What should I tell them your name is? So Hashem answers Moshe, Eke Asher Eke, I will be that which I will be. And then he switches, Vayomer Ko Tomer LeBnei Yisrael, this is what you should say to Bnei Yisrael, Eke, just a single Eke, sent me to you. And in addition, he says, tell them that the God of their fathers, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, has sent me. That is my name forever, my remembrance for generation to generation. We're not going to spend so much time on this. However, Moshe is asking Kadosh Baruch Hu, what name am I coming to them with? Remember, they're seeped in Avodah Zarah. I am coming here as speaking on behalf of God. So who do I say? Who is the God that is sending me? What midah are you going to make apparent to them? What role, what element of all the different character traits, so to speak, of Hashem that people can understand? Which one are you coming to them as? And he says, I'm coming to Ekash or Ekan, following Rashi, which we followed last week. He says, I will be with them in this tzar, like I will be with them in every tzar. And then Moshe, Rashi says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should I really mention that they're going to be more tzaras after this? Hashem says, you're right. I'm the only conveying this to you, but to them, just tell them once, I will be with them. I'm with them in their tzara. Now, what does this mean? I'm with them in their tzara. Moshe comes to a people who've been abused for 210 years, whose children have been slaughtered and thrown into the river, etc., etc., right? We know what happens here. He was bathing in at one point in Jewish blood. You know, it wasn't a pleasant experience, Egypt. And he says to them, to a people who believes in the sun and the moon and all of that, that there is a single God, and what you're going through is not because the evil, destructive gods of darkness and night have overpowered the good gods of light and day and life. That's not why you're slaves. You're slaves because the one God of heaven and earth wants you to be here and is with you in this, and it's you're playing a role. That's what he's telling them. Now, the other approach makes a lot more sense. We're here because the evil gods have overpowered the good gods, and that's why all this evil is taking place. But if Moshe comes to them and says, there's a single God, I'm speaking for him, and he is with you in your tzar. In other words, just like I am nothing and Hashem is working through me and I'm here to present God's message, you too, Klal Yisrael, all the tzaras that you're going through is so that you're shlichim. God is going to use you to demonstrate eventually his all-powerfulness. He's going to use you to demonstrate that he controls heaven and earth. He's allowing you to be slaves here in Mitzrayim so he can come in full glory and release you and redeem you and do big miracles so that the whole world will know that there is only one God. He's with you in your tzaras. Now that is not an easy message to convey. So you should accept it like I accept it, that Hashem is in a sense, also using me. I am being used, I'm nothing, I take no credit. All my work, all my tzar, all my effort, all my struggles with you, it's all not to my credit. And all what you went through is also, don't take any credit for it, that you survived, that you persevered, that you kept your names and you kept your language. Hashem is with you. This all has a purpose. And he's using you for a great Giloy Shechina. Now, that's not so easy for people to accept. And this is the first thing. In fact, if you see it this way, the sneh is a mashal for Moshe, and it's a mashal for the Jewish people. They are like the sneh, and the fire of Hashem is burning, using them to as something to burn on, so that something extraordinary. It's obvious something extraordinary is happening. They're not being consumed. They're having six children at one time. They're developing. They're like the sneh. You are in a very low position, like this net, and don't worry, Hashem is with you. So Moshe already is faced with the idea now that he has to convince them to find meaning in their suffering. Rav Yashub Yer Soloveitchik in Shemos makes a point, which we have no time for now, but if it's written up, that in Shemos you don't really hear the Jewish people say a word. They don't rebel, they don't complain, they're silent, they're mute. Perhaps they've accepted their situation. You know, a caste system was a normal arrangement in those days, and that's it. You accept the given, you accept what's inevitable. And the only thing you hear is a sigh when the old king dies and there's a new king and everything gets worse. They sighed like some... just a groan of anguish, but no articulate words, no complaints, no sense of explaining something's wrong, something can be better, we should be doing this, but we're not doing what we are capable of. He points out the first cry you hear is the cry of Moshe in the little teva that his mother made for him. Bochetz, the first time somebody's crying. And he says that crying represents a sense of injustice, that it's not as it should be and things should be better, that there's perspective. It's almost as if Klai Yisrael have no perspective yet, and Moshe has to give them words. In fact, the Zohar says that speech was in Golus, and speech was redeemed. Don't forget that Pesach, which we'll speak about soon, Rav Huttner's ideas, Chazal says, Pesach, the voice is speaking. The whole nature of the Seder is speaking, question, answer. Question, answer means, why is it like this? Let me tell you why it's like this. Perspective, understanding. But in the beginning, Klal Yisrael they weren't even asking why anymore. They had accepted their situation. It was inevitable. There was only a physical cry of the physical pain, the anguish, but not a rejection of the injustice of anything. Until Moshe comes. Moshe's the first one that sees the Mitzri hitting the Jew and does something. He introduces the concept of justice, that it's not as it should be. And even the Jewish people have so accepted their position, they reject the fact that he is coming, that's Dasan and Aviron, to introduce justice. They reject that. They've accepted that this is how it must be. And so he has to come to them, and he tells them, no, this is a plan, and there's a purpose, and there's justice, and you're part of it. It's a whole new perspective to wake them up from their sleep, from the gullus of their speech, you might say, from the inability to see that there is something at the end, that they're working towards a goal, that this all has a purpose and a plan. This is Moshe's job. So now we begin to understand why Moshe asks the next question. Hashem says to him, you're going to go and you're going to gather up the Zakenim, and you're going to tell them that I'm going to save you, etc., and that Hashem appeared to me, and they're going to listen to you, and you and the Zakenim are going to come to Mitzrayim, and you're going to tell him my message, but he's not going to listen to you, and even with a strong hand, with under duress, he won't listen to you, but in the end I will smite him, and then he'll send you, and he goes through the whole process, and he tells Moshe what's going to happen, and in the end you'll leave with great wealth. So he's already telling Moshe that he's going to come, the Zakenim are going to believe him, but Paro's going to make him a hard time. So Moshe says in Perek Dalid, V'hein lo yaminu li v'lo yishmu b'koli ki yomru lo nireh elech Hashem. Third issue. They are not going to believe me. They are not going to hear what I say. And they're going to say, God didn't appear to you. This is all going to fall on deaf ears. Why? Because if I come to them, and even if the Zakenim believe me, and then we go to Paro, and Paro doesn't believe me, and then you have to start doing all these miracles to punish Paro, and in the end, at some future date, who knows how long this will be, they'll send you out. Klal Yisrael will. It's obviously not going to come as some great miracle bursting on the scene. It's going to go through this laborious process of resistance and disappointment and punishments and threats, and finally they're going to come out. So Moshe's beginning to realize something, a paradox here. On the one hand, he would assume at the beginning that because he is just this transparent shell that Anochi is working through, that as soon as he comes to Klal Yisrael, they will see the truth. They will see right through him. They will see his prophecy. They will see God is with him, and he won't have to say anything. It'll be so self-evident. They'll follow him, they'll believe him, and they'll be strong, and everything will be fine. But then when Moshe realizes, he begins to realize that it's not so simple. The Zakenim might believe him, the people that didn't serve Avodah Zarah, the people that stayed away, the Shevet Levi perhaps, but that's all Hashem said. Those are the only people Hashem said will follow him. What about the Hamon Am? They're going to be discouraged. And not only that, we have to look, because the Torah does not flesh out for us all the details of this story. You have to look in Yechezkel. Perek 20, when he goes back and talks about what happened there in Mitzrayim, and there's something missing from our Parsha. It doesn't openly state in our Parsha that Hashem told Moshe that he has to tell the Jewish people that they must divest themselves completely of their Avodah Zarah. It doesn't really say that clearly in Shemos or Ve'era, but in Yechezkel it says that very clearly in Perek Chaf, Pasuk Zayin, Va'omer Aleim, he's talking about Mitzrayim, he tells them, every man cast away your despicable idols, do not pollute yourself. And then he goes on in Pasuk Ches, but they rebelled against me, and they did not listen to me. And they did not cast away their idols. And they did not forsake their idols of Egypt. And I was full of anger for them. This is what Yechezkel fills us in here, that Moshe has to go to them to lift them out of the 49 levels of Tumah to get them to separate themselves, and that if they're going to be resistant, and Moshe is making reference to that when he says to Hashem, lo yishmuli, they're not going to listen to me, they're not going to take their, you know, hear my message. And Hashem doesn't say yes they will, because Moshe's talking about the Am. Hashem says, you're right, therefore I'm going to give you Nisim. Three Nisim you can do. And he tells Moshe the three Nisim that he's going to do in front of the Zikanim, not in front of Paro. This is for the Jewish people, so they should trust Moshe, and they should begin to think that maybe they should change perspective from their paganistic views and try to now shift, try to understand this whole new system of monotheism. So he gives Moshe three Nisim, the Nachash, the Tzaras, and the blood. By the way, notice, just a side point, when Moshe's staff turns into a nachash, that's in front of the Zikanim, it's Aaron's staff that turns into a tanin in front of Paro, and then it's specified in the pasuk, sometimes take your staff that turns into a nachash, take Aaron's staff, there's two matzahs here, but that's a separate issue, but you keep your eye on it in the pasuk. In any case, when Moshe is now shown three different nisim, then he starts with another question, you might say, and he says to Hashem in Pasuk Yud, after he's given the Nisim to convince them, Vayomer Moshe Hashem, Bi Ado Hashem, please Hashem, Lo Ish Devarim Anochi, I'm not a man of words, not yesterday, not the day before, not from when you began to speak to me, Ki Kavad Pe Uchavad Lashon Anochi, I am heavy of mouth and heavy of tongue. I'm not a man of words. And this is what we're going to concentrate on now, because it comes up again in Va'era, except in a different form, where he says twice, I am an Orel Sefasayim. I'm uncircumcised of the lips. And now we want to know what is Moshe worried about here for his shlichus, in terms of successfully fulfilling his shlichus. Once Hashem gives him Nisim, because Klal Yisrael need convincing in order to change their whole way of thinking, Moshe realizes something very paradoxical. You would think that if somebody was clearly a man of God, that God was evident in this person, that God's Shechina was all over this person, like the fire in the Sneh, that people would see that and instantly respond to it, and accept it, and it would speak for itself. And Moshe wouldn't have to convince them with words and argue and make philosophical, you know, discussion and try to prove what they're doing is wrong and the new way is right. In other words, if Hashem is acting through Moshe, shouldn't that be self-evident? And now he's beginning to realize, through the fact that Hashem is giving him Nisim to convince the general population, that although he knows that he is just acting on behalf of God, that no one else sees it. No one else can actually see that. He actually has to come with philosophical arguments to try to get them out of their mindset. And no one sees the evident Kedusha and the Shechina that's on him. And when he realizes that now he has to come as a leader with speeches and convincing arguments, it's a whole nother level. You letting oneself be used as shaliach is a great madrega. It's an enormous madrega. But you think that is enough? That's enough. What else do you need? The people will automatically see and everything will be okay. But now he realizes he needs to, beyond that, be able to convey to them the truth of God's, you know, existence in this world and get them to switch their whole mindset. And that's when he says, Lo ish tevarim anochi. How can I, that you want also from me? And that I should speak? I'm not an articulate person. I'm heavy of mouth and heavy of tongue. Now, the mouth and the tongue being heavy, though, first of all, the mouth, the throat itself and the tongue are the speaking apparatus, part of the speaking apparatus of the physical body. This seems to be, Moshe is explaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you might say, explaining that he doesn't have the gift of, you know, the golden tongue. Aaron does, which is why he says next, go to Aaron. He's so gifted. He speaks so beautifully. He can move them. But I'm not gifted. I can't convey all of these things. I don't know how to, I might know these ideas in my head, but I'm not capable of expressing them to a skeptical or resistant population. Because of the Nisim that Hashem agrees to give Moshe, he realizes how hard his task is going to be, that they need Nisim. You would think they don't need Nisim at all. If Moshe comes, the Shechina is with him, that's enough, it's evident. Everybody drops down to the floor, Hashem Hu Elokim, and that's it. It's not so simple. By the way, there's and something that's analogous to this. My grandfather used to say, Rav Schwab used to say, that the fact that a person is Ish Elokim is not evident. Judaically speaking, we know that the neshama is invisible and the neshama is hidden. And a person's levels of ruchnius are often hidden, and they're not self-evident to everybody who sees them. And the proof is that in the Navi, when you have the story of the Isha Shunamis, whose son died, and she says to, the Isha Shunamis, when she makes a, she says Elisha's always traveling around, and she wants to make a place for him to stay when he's in the neighborhood, so she makes a room in the attic. So she says to him, you know, let's make a place for the Isha Elokim. So Chazal asks, how did she know he was an Isha Elokim? What kind of question is that? Isn't it evident that someone is the Isha Elokim? Is a Navi performing Nisim? What kind of question? How did she know? So Chazal answers, she deduced it from the fact that after watching him for a while, she noticed that there were never flies around him in the summertime when it was hot. In other words, a person's connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not self-evident. Even Moshe coming, Shechina medaberes mitoch grono, this Shechina is already just speaking through him, it's not even evident who he is. So now Moshe makes an argument, this is, I'm not capable of this. And Hashem says to him the following answer. And here, by the way, Chazal learned out that this was 7 days because he says mitmol, which is yesterday, shalshom, 2 days ago, me'az, before that, and there's three gams, that's six, and this is the seventh day, which was tesvav nisan, which is a year later, would be the day of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay. Hashem says to him, and now, you know, we used to play that little game, which of these don't belong, which of these is not like the others. So Hashem says to Moshe, when he says, I can't speak, and he's speaking about his physical ability as an orator, as a leader. Hashem says to him, Mi sam peh la'adam, who gave man a mouth? Now watch this. Umi yasum ilim, who will make someone dumb, speechless? O cheresh, or deaf? O pikeach, or sighted? O iver, or blind? Halo anochi Hashem. What's wrong with this list? Who made humans dumb? You know, they can't mute. Basically, they can't speak, they can't hear, they can't see, or they see. If not me, Hashem. Obviously, the one that doesn't belong is pikeach, sighted. Sighted is not normally associated with all the blemishes, all the mumim. These are three types of blemishes in a human being. They can't speak, they can't see, they can't hear. And he adds in here that someone can see. Now, what is that? Well, we understand that sight is from this pasuk, it seems to be that sight is also among the blemishes. Now, what we mean by that is, we have to think about what is the origin of sight, of seeing. And this brings us back to the story of the chet, Eitz Hadas. And we know that as soon as they ate from it, v'tipakachne einei shneihem, their eyes opened up. And Rambam makes it very clear in the Mor Nevuchim, and everybody, it's logical, that it is impossible that they gained something of benefit from the sin. This must be a diminution. This must be a flaw. This must reduce them, not elevate them, that they now can see. So the understanding is that before the sin, the function of the eye was utilitarian, so not to trip over a rock, not to pick a spoiled fruit. But in no way did the eye make judgments, assess the truth or the sincerity or the reality of something. That was done by the neshama, by this feeling of emes and sheker in a person. They would be able to see somebody or some situation, and the intuitive knowledge of emes and sheker, which comes from the neshama, would make an assessment and would judge. And they would not, the eyes didn't play a role in that. However, after the Eitz Hadas, the eyes became very involved, and the eyes began making judgments, and the eyes began assessing situations. The eyes are fooled very often. We know about optical illusions, and the eyes only see the exterior, not the interior. Even Shmuel HaNavi was fooled by his eyes and thought that the Bechor of Yishai would be the king, and Hashem said, no, ha'adam yira le'enayim, you only see with your eyes what's outside, I see the inside, the heart. So, now making judgment based on what the eyes see, in other words, what makes sense, actually is a mum. And Moshe is saying, I can't convince them because they are so in another mindset, and I'm not capable of making the arguments, I'm not gifted with speech. And Hashem says, listen, the fact that they, Klal Yisrael, that it'll be hard to convince them because they have different perspectives, because they see things differently, because their perspective is wrong, it's not your issue. It's not your issue. You go speak to them, and I will change their perspective. Don't worry. Through the Makos, they'll know that their perspective of believing in the different powers is wrong, because I will show them step by step how I overcome each and every one of the God concepts of Mitzrayim, which the Makos are, each one of the Makos was one of the God concepts of Mitzrayim. So then he goes to Paro, and when he's at Paro, we know the whole story, things get worse, and this is the process of how it would go. And then Hashem sends him again to start the mission, in a sense. This was like the false start and stop, which was built into the system that it had to happen. And then after that all takes place and everyone's angry at Moshe and nothing happened and Paro made it worse, then comes the second phase of the Geula process, is go back to Paro, go back to Bnei Israel. And here's where Moshe says, I'm an Orel Sefasayim. And where Moshe uses this phrase is in, where he uses the phrase in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Beis, and then again in Perek Vav, Pasuk Lamid, and this is followed by Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Okay? Which we have to focus on now. Moshe says, now I'm an Orel Sefasayim. Now this is a different argument than the one before. Because in between that last argument of that I can't convey these ideas to them, a lot has happened. There was this false start and stop, as we just said. Things got worse. The Jews got angry. This was all built into the system. My grandfather explains just for a second the reason that this was was built into the system, that he would take away the straw and all that, is because in the end, when Hashem would punish Mitzrayim, each and every individual Mitzri, and I'm sure my grandfather came from Germany, I'm sure this was, you know, what he was thinking, each and every Mitzri would say, well, I didn't do anything. Paro enslaved them. What do you want from me? It's no fair to punish me. What was I supposed to do? So when Paro took away their straw, he made them basically spread out throughout the whole country trying to gather straw. So then it became the option of every mitzvah to either help them and have rachmanis and give them straw and help them out, or to be cruel and to make their life harder. Every mitzvah was then tested, how they would respond as the Jews started searching and searching, trying to gather the tevin. And then every mitzvah earned their just, you know, rewards in the end, and that's how we know they were punished on the Yam, each one according to their level of sympathy or cruelty to the Jewish people. So he gave them one last chance to save themselves or incriminate themselves, and everyone then was deserved the judgment that they received. This was to bring about justice. And then when Moshe says, what's going on? You haven't helped them. And Hashem says, now you're going to see the real thing. That's what happened in the beginning of the era. I have come Bekel Shakai. Now I'm coming with Yudke Vavke, with Osos and Mosim. Now it's starting. So everything's changed in the middle. And then when it's really starting, seriously, then Moshe says, I'm an Arel Sefasayim. And then the pasuk goes and repeats that Moshe says he's an Arel Sefasayim. And Perek Zion answers, this is the answer, Perek Zion Pasuk Aleph, this is the answer to his issue, that his problem, that he is an Arel Sefasayim. He says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, because the pasuk before is, Ani Arel Sefasayim, Ech Yishma Elai Paro. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Re'ei Nesaticha Elohim Leparo, Va'aron Elohim Leparo, Va'aron Achicha Yia Neviecha. Let's understand Moshe's question, we'll understand Hashem's answer. Rav Huttner explains, this comes from his Sefer on Pesach, Maimer Tesvav, famous. He explains the idea of an Arel Sefasayim. We begin to understand Moshe. The stuttering, that goes back perhaps on Kaved Peva, Kaved Lashon. Arel Sefasayim is of a totally different nature. It's my lips are uncircumcised. We're not talking about a problem with his physical apparatus now. We're talking about something mystical and spiritual. What does that mean? The whole allegory of having uncircumcised lips is not talking about something physical. We're obviously discussing something much more abstract. Rav Huttner explains that Moshe's fear in being the messenger here was that he would not be able, but in a different way, to elevate them, to relate to them, to bring them out of their madrega, because Moshe had a little bit of a mum. Moshe had a little bit of a blemish. And that blemish is called Arel Sefasayim. Now, when we think of an Arla, we think about something that hasn't yet been removed. An Arel is someone without a bris milah. And the bris milah removes something that shouldn't be there. So when Moshe's lips are uncircumcised, it means there's a mum that must be removed. And the question is, what is Moshe's mum? Now, Rav Huttner explains that Moshe's mum was in his speech. We know that physically, but this is the more Kabbalistic approach, the more philosophical approach. Way back in Bereishis, when Hashem was creating man, the famous pasuk in Perek Beis, pasuk Vav, V'yitzar Hashem Elokim es ha'adam, afar min ha'adama, there's two yuds in the words V'yitzar. Hashem formed man, and Rashi says, two yuds, one for this world, one for the next world. This is a dichotomous creation, a guf and a neshama. Vayitzar Hashem Elokim es ha'adam afar min ha'adama, vayipach ba'apo nishmas chayim, and he blew into him a neshama, dirt and a neshama, very opposite. Unkelis says there, on the words, vayihi adam lenefesh chaya, and man was a living being, Unkelis says there, Ruach Mimalala, a speaking spirit. So what that means is that the malachim, who are strictly of a spiritual nature, the animals, who are strictly of a physical nature, both, in a sense, are mute. We attribute speech to animals as if they're, you know, making an argument, or we attribute speech to malachim, but only man really speaks. It's allegorical otherwise. Speech is the indication that there is an unusual union between the spiritual and the physical. Speech is where the union between the neshama and the guf is evident. And how a person speaks is very revealing to what they identify with more, the guf, or the neshama. Now, a neshama is invisible. You cannot see a neshama. But on the other hand, the effects of a neshama on a human being are not invisible. It takes many years for this to become kind of, you know, evident, but eventually it's, you see the effects of a soul on a person, certainly in the way they speak. So the act of speaking represents a union, a chibur between the guf and the neshama, to convey with a physical apparatus abstract notions that come from an invisible, transcendent world, and to try to convey these ideas and get them from one person's mind into the next person's mind through vibrations, you know, sound waves, and that those words and ideas can change the person and elevate the person. This is the domain. The speech is the area in where the chibur between the guf and the neshama is evident. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu had a mum, a blemish, and that is that he was a very extraordinary person. He wasn't like everybody else, that's obvious. He was born, the house was filled with light. We're not talking about an average person. We're talking about a person with extraordinary talent, obviously, a spiritual nature, immense intelligence, etc. And Moshe was 80 at the time. And he already was makabel that he is a, like the snaz we said last week, just a shell, a transparent shell for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to work through. Rav Hunter explains that in Moshe's case, the chibur, the connection between his neshama and his guf, was very tenuous. He was more neshama than he was guf. He really was very loosely connected to this world. He was not fully engaged in this world and its drives. It sounds a little bit like what we said about Yitzchak after the Akedah. It's not that dissimilar. This is a mum. It's a mum because he needs to come to them as their leader, and they're at the other end of the spectrum. And the leader must relate to the am. He's at one end, and they're at the other end. They're not connected to the neshama, and he's not connected to the guf. And this is why he says to Hashem, I'm an orel sefasayim, there's a mum. In other words, from the Jewish perspective, until that disconnect is rectified and there is a chibur between the guf and the neshama, there's a mum. Now notice, Moshe Rabbeinu went from being lo ish devarim anochi, a man who felt that he could not adequately convey in limited, finite words all the ruchniyistic understandings and levels that he was connected to, that he was experiencing. How could he limit them and bring them into little finite words for people who didn't have the ability to grasp this? He said, Lo ish devar manochi. How could he make the transition? We go from Lo ish devar manochi before Har Sinai to Ela ha-devarim asher diber Moshe. The whole Sefer Devarim is Moshe beautifully articulating all type of ruchnius ideas to Klal Yisrael. There's no issue. What changed? What changed is Vayered Hashem al Hahar. Hashem came down on the mountain. V'Moshe Allah el ha-Elokim. At Har Sinai there was a chibur. The Shechina came down. Moshe went up. And after Har Sinai, the connection between the ruchnius and the gashmius was solidified. Not just in Moshe, in the world. And that's why this era is an era of open miracles, because the two worlds are blending. And Moshe is the example of that. Moshe is the simon, he's the example of the process of the blending of the two worlds. There's the 10 mamaros that the physical world was created with. They are the rules that govern the physical world. On the other side, there's the Aseres Hadibros. This is also from Rav Huttner. There's the 10 commandments which come from the world of the Ruchnius. What links the two is the 10 Makos. The 10 Makos begin the process of showing, of demonstrating the connection between the physical and the Ruchnius, that it's not a disconnect. Here on this earth, people are living out their lives and going through emotions and doing things that must reflect the Ruchnius. Moshe is the simon. He's the example. He's the leader that proves by example that there can be and there will be a coming closer and closer, a union, a harmonizing force that will combine the Ruchnius and the Gashmius, not just for Moshe, for Bnei Yisrael. This initiates 1,000 years of Nevuah, of open miracles, this time period. Not just for Moshe, but for the Bnei Yisrael, and the world at large get a glimpse of this. So he goes through the process of Har Sinai, and he becomes the most articulate spokesman. But until that time, Hashem says to him, you're right, you are so disconnected from the Gashmius. Your spiritual side is so much beyond your physical side. That's true. However, you will still play the role as the one coming to Klal Yisrael with Aaron as your helper. Aaron will speak for you. Now look what the pasuk says. Vayomer Shem Moshe, Re'eh, see. Nesaticha Elohim leparo, va'aron achicha yiye neviecha. Aaron, your brother, will be your navi. He's going to speak for you. We're so used to taking this pasuk, or any type of pasukim like this, not literally. Moshe says in the pasuk is going to be an Elohim, and Aaron is going to be a navi. So it seems that this pasuk, according to the Rishonim, is taken literally. The Rav Avram ben Harambam quotes the Rambam, his father, who quotes the father of the Rambam, who quotes the Rimi Gash, who quotes the Rif, who quotes Rav Sadia Gaon as saying this is literal, which means we always think about Moshe as a Navi. Aaron was the Navi. Every Navi got their Nevuah through a mediator. They didn't see Hashem directly. Every Navi got a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu through some type of medium. No one sees God. The Malachim don't see God. Moshe is actually not the Navi. He's the step before the Navi. He is the medium that conveys the Nevuah to Aaron. He's like a Malach. That's what the Pasuk is saying. He's like a Malach who's giving a Nevuah to Aaron. And Aaron's the Navi. Moshe's even a step before the Navi. He's actually a Malach, partially. And interestingly enough, in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Vav, it's a Pasuk that says, Vayomer Shmuel, etc., Hashem Asher Asa Es Moshe Ve Es Aaron. He made Moshe. Asa Es Moshe. He made him, in a sense, into something unusual, unlike any other human being. In fact, in Hilchas Avodah Zarah of the Rambam, he says that Hashem Asa Moshe Rabbeinu, he made Moshe a Rebbe, v'Rabban shall call Hanaviyim, and the Rebbe of all the Neviyim, and he sent him. You see in Tanakh, they use this strange phrase, God who made Moshe, Asa Es Moshe. So he says here that Hashem is telling him, you're right, you're Aral Sif HaSayim, because you're more like a Malach. How else did Moshe go up on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights without food? You know, we don't think about it, but we're talking about a human being who lived once. He was human. Okay? However, we're not Christians. We don't believe in a God-like human who's God. But there was once a person in our history who was more God-like than human, who was more like a Malach. And the Pasuk says that he played the role of a Malach. This is perhaps before Har Sinai. In this case, where he was disconnected, Aaron, he would convey the Nevuah, the message to Aaron, and Aaron would convey it to the people. In fact, you see later on just a tiny little expression of this when they have to go in front of Paro and do the miracles to Paro, like Aaron had to throw down his stick and it became a tanin. Look in Pasuk Tes, and Ches, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Perek Zayin, ve'al Aaron lemar, Ki yedaber aleichem paro, lemar tnu lechem mofes, Paro is going to say, make a proof for yourself. Okay? Look at the next words. V'amarta el Aaron, you will tell Aaron, kach es matcha, take your staff, v'hashlech lefnei Paro yihit latanin, and it will be a tanin. You tell Aaron that he should take his staff and throw it in front of Paro. In other words, Aaron, he is the malach giving Aaron the nevuah. So we're not off base by, and Moshe understands that he is an Orel Sefasim, but in Judaism what's unique about this is that to us this is called a mum. Really, to us this is not the ideal position for a man, to be disconnected, to be like a malach. We needed one once in our history to bring us Torah, to go up on the mountain to someone we can trust, that he's, as we said again, legitimate, authoritative, trustworthy. This is the most critical thing. All of this is so Klal Yisrael will accept Torah from Moshe. All of this, Moshe's Madrega, and what he's asked to do and how he does it, is all for one end, that we will accept Torah from him with confidence. This is all, everything leads to that one goal, that we trust Moshe. So the Torah is establishing here that he's a malach, but as we said, it changes and he becomes more attached, the chibur becomes stronger, and in our Jewish perspective, that's really the highest goal. The union of the ruchnias and the gashmias. And Rav Hunter points out here, one last idea. We, without even thinking, express this concept many times a day. Certainly in the morning, Rav Hunter points out, the juxtaposition between Asher Yatzar, the bathroom bracha, followed directly by Elokai Neshama, Shenasata Bi. The juxtaposition of the two makes it clear to us that the union of the utmost Gashmias and the utmost ruchnius is what is the uniqueness of the person. In fact, when we make the bracha of Asher Yatzar, we end Asher Yatzar Sadam Mechachma V'Ravon Nekavim Nekavim Chalim Chalim Galay V'Yadu Alef Nekizim Rofei Chol Basar U'Mafli La'asot. So Rav Hunter explains the word Mafli, Pele. He does wonders. Rav Hunter explains that Pele is specifically used to describe that impossible union between the guf and the neshama. That's the wonder. That this physical body that's very similar to every single animal. Anyone who's ever had a pet is shocked by the similarities between the human and the animal in the physical apparatus. And yet, this human body has within it a neshama. This is a pele. This is what is, which is awesome. And it is on Pesach that we speak about, we use our mouth to speak about this union that took place between the Ruchnius and the Gashmius, this new system that broke into history and taught the world that the Gashmius and the Ruchnius are harmonized. As we said, Pesach is Pesach, it's the time for the mouth to speak and to describe it. And therefore, When we understand the enormity of Moshe's challenge, both with who he was and coming to Klal Yisrael and who they were and what he had to accomplish, we see Moshe's role and all of this, as we said, the difficulty of Moshe's role is all so that through every aspect of it, it will be proven to Klal Yisrael that Moshe's Torah is authoritative. This is all of this is for one purpose, so that forever after we will have confidence that the Torah we accept from Moshe is purely Torah Hashem. That's really the end result, the upshot of everything, is that we know where our Torah comes from and who gave us our Torah. And we trust it. Okay, everyone. Have a good week.